faith, hope, inspiration, and edification. Welcome to the Edify Podcast with Billy Hallowell, a show that cuts through the cultural noise to explore the biggest headlines and issues of the day. Let's dive into today's show.
Welcome to 2021 and to the Edify Podcast. I am back with a new episode, and there is so much going on today's episode. I'm very excited. We are going to be having Ben Higgins on the show. If you don't know Ben, and you might know his name, it might seem familiar, it's because he was actually the star of ABC's The Bachelor for the 20th season of the show. So he was The Bachelor, and we're going to have him on the show today because this is what I love about people, right? You get a chance to hear their story, to hear who they are, and to see that, you know, what we see on TV sometimes is not, and actually many times, is not the full story of who a person is. And Ben is using his platform for some pretty amazing things. He has a new book coming out on February 2nd called Alone in Plain Sight, Searching for Connection When You're Seen But Not Known. And so that comes out February 2nd. We're going to be talking about the book. We're going to be talking about what it was like to be on The Bachelor, his faith, and so much more. But before we get there, I have to acknowledge the fact that we are living in somber times, to say the least. I mean, it has been, the past few days have been painful, chaotic, difficult. I know there are a lot of people out there who are listening who are going through a lot of different emotions. There are people who are feeling betrayed, who are feeling depressed, who are saddened by the state of political affairs for all different reasons, okay? And I'm not here to get into the he said, she said, to get into whose candidate you should support. That is not what I want to talk about here at the start of the show. But I do want to talk about what is plaguing us. And I normally start with headlines. There is no other headline to start with than what has happened in this nation this past week and what is continuing to happen in this country. You know, when I look at the Capitol, when I look at Washington, D.C., I see these amazing buildings. I see these amazing symbols of this experiment that America is, this incredible, amazing, life-altering, world-altering experiment that has not been perfect, okay? I know a lot of times we leave out the details. Sometimes America is not a perfect place because America, like every other nation, is made up of sinners, of people who make mistakes and who do bad things. And our history reflects that at moments. And we've talked a lot about this on the show and in culture. We discuss this, and that's important. But the thing to emphasize is that America is a beacon of light for the rest of the world. And the freedoms that we enjoy here are unparalleled. The First Amendment, there are so many things. You know, I wake up every day and I complain about things. And I think we all can fall into that trap. And yet you look at what we are afforded, the opportunity, the possibility that America offers us. I'm so passionate about this because it is so important. We do not want to lose this country that we have made, that has been made over the centuries here. We do not want to lose it. And what we saw happen in Washington, D.C. was an unimaginable display of horror. It was horror. It sent a message to the rest of the world that we are in shambles. And it shed light on a reality that I think a lot of us have really been ignoring. I know a lot of Christians, a lot of people in the faith space, many of us have talked about this. But this is a problem that's plaguing everyone. And it's the problem of lostness, the problem of disconnection. You know, from our cities burning to the ground over the summer to protesters storming the U.S. Capitol. Think about this. These symbols that I talked about of freedom, the amazing, incredible symbols of what America stands for, to have the Capitol with our vice president and our leaders invaded. And yes, most of the people who were at the protests were peaceful, but those who stormed into the Capitol, leaving people dead. I mean, I can't even imagine that we have to sit here and have conversations about this event and haggle over the details. There is no excuse. There is nothing to haggle over. This was horrific. And yet we find ourselves at this confusing crossroads. And I think everybody on a partisan sense wants to blame the other side. You know, but listen, no matter where you are, we've had a slow drip of chaos, and it has been leaking and leaking and leaking and dripping and dropping for a long time. And I think last week, it was as though somebody just took the faucet and abruptly turned it on, and the water came flowing out. And I don't even, well, there's a lot I could say, but here's what I want to say, okay? That these events have been going on. And when I say these events, these disconnective events, the chaos, the infighting, the back and forth, the horrific commentary coming from our leaders, it has been going on for a while. And if you'll recall, in 2017, there was a congressional baseball shooting that targeted Republican lawmakers and that gravely injured two people, okay? There was that shooting. There has been threats, harassment on both sides of the aisle. There has been irresponsible language. And I'm not going to go any further than saying that because I don't want to spark any more drama or chaos, because the real point of what I want to get to here, okay, the real issue that I want to get to is that we are all sitting here asking ourselves why. Why has this happened? And there are a lot of answers, probably, possibilities, things that we could come up with. But I want to go back to something that I think is essential. This idea that God has designed us to connect with Him, okay? You might not believe in God, and that's fine, that's your right. But the God that created us has created us with a void that He can fill for us, and that when He does fill it, it transforms our lives in unimaginable ways if we allow it to be filled properly, okay? So not everybody running around saying that they love God, okay, is going to do the right thing all the time. That's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is we were designed for that relationship with God. And when we decide that we're going to ignore that, or we're going to pretend that God doesn't exist, we end up misplacing where we put our value. We desperately then seek a God or gods in something else. And that's something some of you might disagree with me on. It's something I know to be true. I believe it to be true. And for many, this disconnection, this replacement, this misplacement, whatever you want to call it, it manifests itself in, you know, maybe obsessing over a job, family, or politics, right? Maybe it's even an issue that you're obsessed with. That happens for a lot of people. And then for some people, it can actually lead us into tragic confusion as we try to seek to fill this void that is within us, this God-shaped void. And, you know, I wrote a book called Playing with Fire, A Modern Investigation into Demons, Exorcism, and Ghosts. And this is a book, I know it sounds heavy from the title, but that focuses in on really evil in our world and what the Bible tells us about it. And it's so tragic because right now we are watching evil unfold. We are watching that misplacement of that void, people trying to fill it with politics, with politicians, with all sorts of different things. We are watching people abandon identity and abandon truth for the sake of personal whims, and however we feel about whatever the issue is suddenly becomes truth. But that is not how truth works. Truth is truth, whether you like it or not. Your feeling, while valid that you have a feeling, is not the truth. The truth is the truth. And when we talk about that God-shaped hole, in my book, I spoke with Dr. Michael Heiser, who is a Bible scholar, and he said something that was fascinating. We were talking about society abandoning or ignoring transcendent truth, right? And he said, quote, "Theologically, I think we're hardwired to hunger for something transcendent, a reality outside of ourselves. The pop phrase is the God-shaped void in all of us. But I think we're hardwired for that. And so people are going to try to fill that with something. And they find the dominant Western worldview really lacking." And that's the problem. Okay, people are hungering for something outside of themselves, and many are finding it in politics or politicians, and sometimes it's in government, the obsessive worship of government, that government is going to somehow save us or fix every issue. And you mix that with this deficiency that both sides seem to have. It's an unwillingness, really, to respect people with different viewpoints, and you end up with a recipe for disaster. And people are out there seeking for something or for someone to protect them, to guide them, to help them. And this might be a rational or not even a moral quest that these people are going on. But the reality is they're on this quest, and we are watching this unfold in this country again and again and again. And what we saw last week was the tragic manifestation of what happens when that clashes in a horrific way. And a lot of people today, a lot of people are ignoring God, right, in exchange for these deficient replacements that can never fully satisfy the void that is in us. You might not believe me, and that's fine. I frankly, at this point, am not concerned about who is believing me or not believing me on this. I want people to believe it because I want people to discover truth. And I don't care about politics or political parties. I care about truth. When you die, where are you going? And beyond that, what does it mean for your life now to accept truth, to accept Christ, and how can that transform you? And the answer is that in amazing ways. I've had a lot of people come at me the last few days and say they don't believe in God, and that's fine. We live in America. That's your right. But I want people to discover truth. I don't want them to discover the Democratic Party platform or the Republican Party platform. I want them to find truth. Because at the end of the day, those platforms are not going to save you. Those platforms are not going to fill that void that is in you. And when I look at what is happening in culture, okay, and I'm sorry that I'm starting so heavy here, but I've got to talk about this because it is on my heart and my mind endlessly the past few days. But when I look at what is happening and I look at the graph of our move away from God, so we can graph that out, we could chart that out, you will see that nearly every other dire issue that is worsening in this country is worsening along that same trajectory. Okay, the trajectory of our abandonment and our cultural decision to say that we don't need God, that we have the truth, that whatever we relativistically believe is true. Okay, it's all on the same trajectory. Pain, suicide rates, addiction, overdose deaths, all of these things are surging at a time when people are looking for value and meaning and to fill the void that is in their hearts. You know, when I look at John 3, and if you're not a Bible believer or a Bible reader, John 3, crack open a Bible, open a Bible app and read it. And I look at the entire chapter, I am fascinated between this conversation that goes on between Jesus and Nicodemus, okay? But when I look at John 3, 16 through 20, here is what I see Jesus saying. He says, "For God so loved the world that he gave his one and only Son, that whoever believes in him shall not perish, but have eternal life. For God did not send his Son into the world to condemn the world, but to save the world through him. Whoever believes in him is not condemned, but whoever does not believe stands condemned already, because they have not believed in the name of God's one and only Son. This is the verdict." Listen to this, guys. "Light has come into the world, but people loved darkness instead of light because their deeds were evil. Everyone who does evil hates the light and will not come into the light for fear that their deeds will be exposed. But whoever lives by the truth comes into the light so that it may be plainly seen that what they have done has been done in the sight of God." Listen, that may not make sense to you. I hope it does, but read that chapter because that is what we are watching right now. We are watching evil and goodness, but what we're really seeing is confusion. Okay, we are watching confusion unfold. And rather than letting God guide us and placing our faith in him as a culture, we are looking everywhere else. We are putting Jesus at the center of everything in the church, hopefully, but it looks like some of us might not be. It looks like some of us might be putting other things, and I've been guilty of this, so I am not preaching at you, at the center. But if our culture would reinforce that Jesus is what matters, that God and faith in rooting ourselves to something bigger than ourselves, to something beyond us, that is what is important, we would see individual lives change, and in turn, we would see culture improve. And I look at Ezekiel, okay? I look at Ezekiel 36:26, and there is a line that just moved me this week. It says, "I will give you a new heart and put a new spirit in you. I will remove from you your heart of stone and give you a heart of flesh." And it just got me thinking. I mean, we want change. And how do we get change? I will tell you, I have told 14,000 stories, okay, as a journalist and as somebody who has worked in media, more than that probably at this point, but around 14,000 stories. And what has convinced me of the truth of Jesus and the ability to transition and move us and change us has been those stories. When I went into media, I was a lifelong Christian, but I believed it in my head and not necessarily in my heart. But after I had a chance to tell thousands of stories of people who went from porn stars to Christians, who went from murderers to pastors, when I had the ability to tell those stories and to see that change, there is nothing in this world that will make that kind of change outside of Jesus. Nothing. Nothing as consistent, as powerful, as transformational. And maybe you're not somebody who feels like you're a bad person, okay? Maybe you feel like you're a good person. You do good deeds. Good deeds are not going to do it for you. We do good deeds because we believe that Jesus, we want to be like him. We believe that Jesus wants us to do those things. We see his ministry. We see who he was. But if you're somebody who is curious of what it means to have a more abundant life, read John 3. Read it. And I am sorry that I've gone on for so long here, but I am so passionate about this because what we watched this week, last week, was unacceptable, immoral, evil, and wrong on so many levels. And we are watching a fractured nation filled with confusion, filled with anger, filled with hate, and we have got to be the change. And the only way that we are going to be the change is if we start by changing ourselves. There's a lot to lament, there's a lot to be sad about, but let's cling to hope and shift our focus from these fake gods, and when I say gods, I mean these things that we're using to replace God, whether it's politics or some other thing, and shift that focus to the true living God, and let's help as many people discover him as possible. After the break, I will be back, and I will actually have a little bit of lighter fare for you. I will be bringing on Ben Higgins from The Bachelor to talk about his new book, Alone in Plain Sight. We will be right back.
This podcast is part of the Edify Podcast Network. Edify is a faith-inspiring app that brings together thousands of the best Christian podcasts in one place for your listening enjoyment. Cut through the noise and grow your faith by diving into the world's top Christian podcasts today. Download the Edify app for free from the App Store or Google Play, or by going to edify.app. That's edifi.app.
Welcome back to Edify with Billy Hollowell. I am Billy Hollowell, and I'm actually really excited about the next guest. Now, he was the star of the 20th season of ABC's The Bachelor. Now, listen, I am not a Bachelor watcher, okay? But I've been aware of Ben Higgins because I've known about his faith, I've read quite a bit about his journey, and the fact that he's got a new book out and this really great coffee company called Generous, okay? And we're going to talk a little bit about that, has really caught my attention because not everybody uses, and I know this is no secret, but uses their platform for good, and yet I've seen Ben consistently using his platform for amazing things. And so with no further ado, I want to welcome Ben Higgins to Edify with Billy Hollowell. Hey, Ben, how's it going today?
Man, it's good. It's a great day to be alive. And I say that because it's 52 degrees in Denver on January 5th, and I'm a happy
man. No snow for you guys right now. That's awesome this time of year. That's great.
Yeah.
All right. So, and we're in 2021, right? We've got a new year. So our hope is that it's going to be a really good year, right? Better than 2020, hopefully.
A little bit better.
So here's the deal. I want to talk to you about your book. Your new book that's coming out soon is called Alone in Plain Sight. And I've got a million things to ask you about. But the first question, obviously, and it's probably a loaded question, but I'm just going to throw it out to you because I need to know, how in the world does one end up on The Bachelor? Like, take me through this, and then we'll get into the book and everything else. I got to know.
Yeah. excuse me. I think a lot of people have a bunch of different paths to getting on the show, right? You have, like, some people who have a huge social media following, and the show reaches out to them. You have people who meet a casting director randomly at a restaurant. The casting director says, hey, you should go on the show. For me, my story is a little unique, and it's not different than some, but I was working out here in Denver, Colorado, my first job. I was single, not dating, didn't have any friends, just super lonely. And a lady at my office loved the show. And she came up to me one day and she said, Ben, casting calls for The Bachelor are happening in Denver today. Can I take you to lunch and take you to the casting call? It's like, I'm not going to a casting call. Like, I just can't get myself to do that. She said, okay, well, if I sign you up and they call you, will you go through with the process? I said, oh, of course. Yeah.
What are you thinking, though? Like, what are you thinking at that moment? Are you like, oh, this is ridiculous, kind of, you know?
Yeah. Mostly what I'm thinking is, this is funny. No way this happens. You know, like, it doesn't hit in, like, reality. Like, at this point, you're just signing up. And, like,
right.
You know, tens of thousands of people sign up. So, like, you're not getting your hopes up. And then 5 days later, they called me. And you start the process of kind of vetting through and casting it and talking about life. And it was really just like that to me. And then one day they said, okay, we want you on the show. Will you show up to LA on this date and be on the show? And I said, I guess. And that's how this started. There was not a lot of like setup prep. It was just like, hey, can you be in LA in 2 weeks? And I said, I yes, that sounds great. And can you try to give up 3 months of your life just in case? And I was like, I guess that sounds great. I don't have a lot going on here. So yes.
Was there any hesitation at all in terms of like, well, let me back up. Did you know a lot about the franchise kind of like going into it?
Yeah, I think enough. I'd miss a lot of seasons, but my mom and I would watch together when I was home. And, you know, I'd catch seasons now and then. I would watch a full season every once in a while. I knew enough to know what I was getting myself into. But I had not watched the season previous. And so I didn't know kind of the people that were going to be on the show or a lot of it was new to me. But, yeah, I had watched enough.
So, okay, what for you, after going through the experience, I'll ask you two questions about it, okay? And then I want to get into the book because there's so many, you're dealing with so many interesting issues in this book that I think are so important for where we are right now. But what was the, we'll start with the harder question. Like, what was the hardest part? You know, like looking back, now that you've had time to kind of process it, what was the toughest part of that experience of going through and doing it and having your life sort of out there in that way?
You know, I think the toughest part would be the attention, both positive and negative. You go from being, I was a software salesman in a basement of a tech company, living in a little apartment alone and having no friends, to having people like put me on the cover of magazines and on the side of buildings and say how great you are. I think the slogan for my gnome, the slogan for my season, I just saw the poster back there, was the perfect Ben. That's a lot. Well, at the same accord, you have all the negative opinions, the criticisms, the hate, the confusion, the jabs at your looks, your personality, whatever. Both those things are equally as difficult to process because one makes your head get super big and you start feeling really good about yourself and your chest puffs up, and one really puts you in a low place and you're not prepared for it. Because I have no tangible skill that they're criticizing. If I'm an NFL quarterback and I'm throwing interceptions, I got to expect that people are going to say, hey, he ain't very good. But all they're doing for me is praising, like, me for nothing. And that's hard. It's hard for, I was 25. It's hard for a 25-year-old to deal with.
Well, it's funny you say that. I was just reading, Sadie Robertson Huff was giving this speech at the Passion Conference. And she was saying the other day, she's like, you know, we're not meant to be the ones getting the glory, right? Like, people are not built for that. It's supposed to go to God. She was talking about faith. And I thought that was really interesting because a lot of people struggle when they're in a position like that. And the glory is coming at you, whether you want it or not, that it's coming your way in a position like that. So I would imagine that that was challenging. On the flip side of that, what was the most beneficial or amazing part of that experience when you look back at it?
Yeah, definitely. Well, you know, to mirror what you said, I think it did show me one of the cool things and maybe the most amazing part of the experience is it taught me that fame is not fulfilling. And my buddy once told me, he's pretty famous himself and he's a friend of mine since I was a kid. And he said, hey, no human was meant to be famous. Famous and being famous in itself is not a bad thing, right? Whatever you fall into in life and you get known for something, like, you know, you don't want to run from that. Great opportunities exist because of it. And a platform is given to you. Like, those things aren't bad in itself, but no human was meant to be famous. It's hard to process through. You're not meant to be followed. You're not meant to be worshipped. In fact, like, you know, Jesus talks about, he was wise enough, which would make sense that he was, to say, like, you know, imitate me was pretty much like what Jesus's message was, like, imitate me. Because if you start getting this idea of worship in your head, where you need to worship things greater, bigger than yourself all the time, you're gonna start worshiping other people. And like, people, when they start worshiping you, that gets incredibly daunting. You're always falling short. And so there's only one name meant to be famous. I think, you know, just like, that's a very like churchy answer, but there really is.
But it's the truth, right? That's, you're speaking the truth. I mean, we're not built for it. We're not meant to be able to process it, I don't think.
No, we're not. And there's people that do it better than others, and there's people that can handle it, and there's people that find a rhythm to it. But in itself, it's one, not fulfilling. It doesn't, it never satisfies the desires of the heart, like at all. There's nothing about it that does. Now, there are moments that feel really great. Like in 2 weeks, I get to go play in a golf tournament with a bunch of celebrities, and my dad gets the caddy for me. There's only one reason I'm there, and that's because I was on the show. That is a memory I'm going to hold with my father for the rest of my life. I love that part about being quote unquote famous. Now, the opportunities that come are great, but what are you going to do with it? Like, what is the focus going to be about? Is it going to be about you? Are you going to promote yourself? Are you going to get people to idolize you as a human and think you're great? Or are you going to push it on something bigger than yourself? Talk about something greater than yourself. Talk about something that matters in this world, something that is eternal, something that is truth. And that makes fame fun. It also makes it more fulfilling.
Did you, and then I want to get into the book Alone in Plain Sight, but did you struggle at all? The faith aspect of your story, being a Christian, being on the show, were there struggles there? Was there tension there? And not just personally, but with how people in public and watching perceived you both before, during, and after. I know there's a lot there in that question, but I'm just curious about that dynamic.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of it that's difficult, but I think, yes. So to start this, I'd like to say Christians can be the most difficult.
You don't say. You don't say. I've never experienced that before. Yeah.
You know, it's tough. So you're 20. Picture this. I'm 25. Trying my best to figure out this Jesus thing. Asking a bunch of questions, getting very little answers, but always somehow, whenever I went out pursuing truth, Jesus always showed up. So still believing it, still following it, still practicing it, still praying to Jesus, but having a lot of questions. So you get off this show and all of a sudden, because you confess that, hey, I have a faith in Jesus, now people hold you to a different standard. Great. I can deal with that, right? However, then they start criticizing for your actions, your thoughts, or maybe they start asking you questions and needing to respond to things that I'm not prepared to respond to.
Right.
Now, tensions on the show with my faith, no. And this is why. When people got super critical, and some churches, Christians did, of me going on The Bachelor, and my response was, I went on The Bachelor as a Christian because I believe God is everywhere. It's not, you know, it's not like you turn on cameras and sit in a mansion in LA and all of a sudden God disappears.
Right.
That who I am outside the show is hopefully who I was on the show. And who I am outside the show is a man who believes in Jesus and wants to do my best to help others know who Jesus is and not hurt them pursuing a God of love and joy and peace and understanding. Mm. So no, the tensions, I never felt this weird thing on the show where it's like, uh-oh. This is really going to cause me to question, you know, what I believe. If anything, it allowed me to use my faith and my relationship with God, believing God was with me, and walk through this with more peace, with more comfort, with a different perspective. You know, morally, not really. The show's not going to make you do anything you don't want to do. Like, you know, you say yes or no. You get to make your own decisions.
Right. It may expose the challenges you have within yourself, not you per se, but I'm saying anybody in that, in any position where there's cameras on you. Right. I mean, there's, you know, the way we talk, the things we do, you were saying the person you were before should have been the same person you were on the show. I think for a lot of people, that isn't the case. Right. You know, there are people who go into these things and they change for it, or it exposes some things in them that maybe they didn't even realize they were struggling with. And so I could totally understand what you're saying there.
And I think you're right. But I think they're like, as Christians, we need to know that that place comes from a place of insecurity, of hurt, of pain. Like, there's a reason why they're not confident enough in themselves and their walk, or their adventure with Jesus to like use that within the show, because they feel like they've got to change for it. They feel like they got to be somebody different. And like, I think the response that I felt I received and many others receive is criticism and a lot of like questions. I think the better way to respond is to say, hey, like, obviously you're hurting. Like, I just I'm here to support you in that, because that could happen to any of us, right? We could change for any given thing. It's just part of it.
Well, and rather than condemning each other, right? Like, and I think it's just human nature that, and I think Christians, we fall short in this area sometimes. We should be there to support each other. And if you're seeing somebody struggle, and again, I'm not talking about you, but if you're seeing somebody struggle in some way, going and actually trying to help, not piling on that person. I think that happens a lot to people in media and entertainment. I've seen it happen. It's happened to me. I've seen it happen to a lot of people where there's a moment or you say something maybe you shouldn't have said, and there's not this sort of like grace-filled approach to it. And so I love, though, that your experience was really, I mean, it sounds like you had a really positive experience overall, and it showed you some good things about your own walk with God.
Yeah, I'd say the experience was, I mean, I was speaking at, I did a speaking tour to, I don't know, like it was 2 years ago, to Christian camps and a couple churches. And I was standing up on stage one day and it hit me. It's like, this is great. I have a blast with this, right? I get to sit down with great thinkers and great people and discuss topics that I love to discuss and discuss greater meanings to the world and all these things. Then I get to just stand up on stage and speak to people, which is something that I have, like, again, no credibility doing. I don't have a tangible skill. I don't think I'm a great teacher. I can throw a speech together. And I was standing up there and it's like, you know what? What's really interesting is I went on a show, a reality television show, that's wild and crazy. And now people want to listen to me. Or maybe the better way to say it that isn't so self-deprecating is now I have the ability to have a platform at which I get to have a seat at the table and talk and share stories and discuss life with people. That's an incredible thing for me, and something that's lasted now 5 years, where I get to discuss and have say and have my voice matters, which holds a different level of responsibility, but a really cool opportunity for me to have in life. On the flip side, if you're not in the show, you still have that same responsibility and same opportunity.
Right.
I just didn't realize it before. And now it's a little more apparent to me.
Well, and you were saying before too, like, you know, what you do, you have this opportunity now. You have a platform. You've got a new book coming February 2nd, yeah. Alone in Plain Sight, Searching for Connection When You're Seen But Not Known. And that title is so interesting to me for so many reasons. I think culturally right now, so many people are disconnected. And the crazy thing is we're more connected than ever. We've got like a million tools to connect with each other. And yet so many people are struggling in this area. But before we get into all that, what was it that made you, because again, you could do whatever you want. You've got this amazing platform. Why did you want to write this book?
Good question. Well, one thing with the book I want to start with saying is the book itself has a lot more questions than answers. There's a reason for that. Because I don't love giving advice. I'm not very good at it. Typically when I give advice, it doesn't help. It hurts. And so I wrote this book, kind of a cry from my soul, saying, I have a lot of questions. And the more and more I talk about the questions I have, and the more and more I talk about my own insecurities publicly, the more and more people reached out to me privately and said, hey, I feel the same way. And I felt alone. People would tell me, and I personally did, I felt alone in this journey, in this pursuit, in this adventure, because I was nervous to say I was doubting. I was nervous to talk about my fears and my frustrations. And so this book is a cry from my soul to say, hey, you're not alone. We're not alone. We're in this. Why this book compared to anything else? I mean, it would have been great to write a bachelor tell-all. I don't know how many opportunities I'll have in life to write a book, quite honestly. And I wanted to make this something I've always desired to do. Always wanted to do something that mattered, something that felt like it had meaning outside of myself. You know, it could have been a fun money grab to write a bachelor tell all, but I don't think it would satisfy or fulfill any piece of me that I want to keep moving towards. But it also is a book because I do feel alone. I do feel like the outsider looking in. And data would show that, you know, almost 40% of the population feels the same way. And I would believe it's even more than that.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So if so many people are feeling alone. I want to try to dive into that space and say, why? Why do we feel alone? And then, is there a solution to connect us once again in a world that, yes, we are more connected than ever? You could find out what I'm doing tomorrow by getting on my social media. You text me or call me. But, and social media itself isn't a bad thing. I don't want to say that. I don't want to just blame on that. But like, it's a snapshot of our great things in life. What we're missing in that is the pains and the frustrations and the struggles and the shame and the guilt that we have carried with us that have separated us from feeling like we matter, that we have purpose, and that we're loved. And so this book confronts that and says, okay, let's confront a connection with ourselves. What shames and guilts and frustrations are you carrying with you? A relationship with others. What do you need to connect with others again? What do you need to humble yourself to enter into these relationships and tell them that you're hurting as well? Then we go into romance and singleness, which typically isn't discussed in the church. And then we go into the final chapter, which is connection with God. And all these things, I think, matter. And all these things, I hope that one person can read it and say, hey, I feel less alone because I read this book from Ben. He struggles with it too, which means I'm not alone.
Yeah. And I love the way you just described that, because you answered about three of my questions about it. Because, I mean, you talked about what you want people to take away from it, which I think is so important. I mean, there's no reason to write a book if you don't have something you want people to take away. And what you're speaking about, so many people are struggling. And I mean, we're looking at very serious statistics in this country, suicide rates through the roof. You're looking at overdose rate. I mean, the loneliness, isolation, and I think 2020 didn't help that, obviously, because there was a lot more isolation because of everything that has been going on, you know, with COVID and all that. And so this book couldn't come at a better time, honestly. Yeah. One of the things about your story that I didn't ask you before that I was curious, like, what was your journey into faith? Like, was this a lifelong thing? Were you born into a Christian family? What's that backstory?
Yeah, you know, I've thought about this a lot. And my story, yeah, I was born into a Christian family, which is awesome. Great. I grew up in a town that is very Christian. We're actually at one point considered the Methodist capital of the world. And for all the good things that brings, it also brings some bad things as well. Lack of diversity, lack of thought, lack of, you know, conversation, et cetera, et cetera. And I grew up as a Christian, always using it as a place of comfort. Always using it as a place to fall back on when things got scary or life got hard, which is awesome. But it was only a place of comfort for me. It was never a place of truth. It didn't have any foundation to it. It didn't have any real true action associated with it. So then as life, as most people do, continues, you start to see the world through a different lens than maybe you did as a child. And all of a sudden, your questions of faith and things of doubt start to come in. And you have to deal with that. You have to wrestle with it. And I took the stance of, I just got off a podcast with a pastor. And I told him this, like, I feel pretty good about making this statement. I, at one point in my life, said, I'm going to follow truth wherever it may lead me. Like, I'm going to open myself up to follow truth wherever it's going to lead me, because ultimately, I'm going to follow whatever is true. I don't want to follow something that is fake. I don't want to follow Santa Claus 2.0. I don't want to just follow something because it's comforting and feels good. I want to follow truth in this life. And every time I went down the journey of following that and asking the tough questions and wrestling with them, and reading who Jesus was and who other, you know, people within world religions were, Jesus always showed up in those moments. It always rang true. So my walk with faith really became a place where it's like, okay, I still have 1,000 questions, a bajillion questions. Most of my life is asking questions. But whenever I really start pursuing those questions, Jesus always shows up. And when Jesus shows up, I got to believe that still to be true. So call it lucky. Say I won the birth lottery. I grew up in a Christian home. Like, my deconstruction didn't have to go all the way to a different side of faith or no faith at all. I'm lucky enough in that way. Hopefully because of the work my parents put in before me. But my walk has really been a place of wrestling to get to a place of truth. And like I said, Jesus always showed up. And so I got to continue to follow it.
Yeah. And I think it's so funny you're saying all this. I have an 8-year-old and a 5-year-old, and my 8-year-old for Christmas, I got her like an NIV Bible, like a kid's Bible. But I mean, I'm trying to like guide her through it, cause there's a lot that at 8 years old, you're not going to understand. Right. And it's stuff that like, but she's in Genesis right now and she's reading and she's like, why did God, you know, she's going through Adam and Eve. Like, why did God put the tree there if he knew that they were going to eat the fruit anyway? He could have stopped them. And these are great questions. Like, these are really good questions for a kid. And of course, people will debate whether or not they think it's literal. But the point is, you know, these are questions that we should be encouraging people to ask. And I think for me, growing up, I believed faith in my head because I was born into it, right? Like, I went to church every week, you know, and it wasn't until like my mid to late 20s over the last like 8 to 10 years that I've been like really understanding more and coming into, you know, it's okay to have questions. It's okay to not be certain about things. We need to keep seeking. I think the problem with deconstructing faith is that a lot of times culture just comes in and replaces faith, right? It isn't an actual reconstruction after, it's sort of a demolishing it and then just replacing it with something else. I think it's good to understand what it is we say we believe and to journey through that. And so I love hearing what you're saying. And so I'm trying to inspire that in my own kids to ask those questions so that they can get to answers, right? And so that I'm not going to just like brush it off. And then 10 years from now, she's going to be like, well, why didn't my dad answer that? Or why didn't he say, maybe I said to her, we don't always know the answers in faith. And that's part of faith. Like, we're not going to know all of the answers until another time. And that's not going to be now. So I love that. And I love that you're living this journey out and being authentic and honest with people, because I think people have these questions and hearing people say what you said actually helps them continue on that journey. So I appreciate that.
You know, one of the cool things that I've gotten comfortable with or uncomfortable with, whatever you're going to say, is the mystery that is God, and living in the wonder and awe of this God and living amidst the constant surprises that exist in creation and with others. And you're right. Like, there are going to be things we can't answer. And it's important at some level, but ultimately what's important is, does this God show up in your world? And if he does, then you want to act on it, right? You want to follow that. If there is a God, and that God calls you to something, our response, I would believe, from everybody would want to be, what can I do? Like, where am I at? Where are you at? What is this whole thing about?
What does he want from me? What am I meant to do? I mean, these are the core questions, right?
Exactly. And so, yeah, it's getting used to the mystery that is God, the wonder that is God. And that's been exciting for me. It's been really beautiful for me. But it's not as simple as it once was.
Yeah. And I think that's okay. And I think reading the Bible, we see how complex it is. I mean, there isn't another holy book that I can think of that presents the flaws of people and the amazing elements of people as honestly and brilliantly as the Bible does. It's not a book that's just presenting all the positive things that people did. You're actually seeing the negative things people did, the impact of those things. You're seeing this amazing story, this connection. And I got to be honest with you, I used to avoid the Old Testament. Like, I'm actually reading through it now, and I'm making myself read through it, and I'm actually loving it for the first time, like really going through it, because I would just be like, oh, the New Testament's where it's at. That's what I need to focus on. But seeing those connections over time and this wonder that you're talking about, seeing that play out throughout human history, right? Like, we have this blueprint and I guess this document that really explains it and communicates it to us in such an amazing way. So I love all of that. And listen, I've taken a lot more of your time than I said I would, but I have to ask you one last thing about Generous Coffee, because this is something else you're doing. And I wanted to give you a little plug for it to talk about it, because it seems really fascinating. So if you want to speak to that a little bit before we head out here.
Yeah, well, I appreciate what you're saying. And, you know, this is an exciting thing. This life that we get to live together and share breath together and walk amongst each other. You know, you're right when you say, you know, if somebody comes to me and says, hey, I've made a terrible decision and I don't know where to turn, I would say, hey, one, God's still there. And two, you're not alone in that decision.
Because if you want to read people of the Bible, you're most of the time going to feel a little bit better about yourself. They've made some really weird decisions, and yet it was all in this pursuit of what matters, where is God at, what can I do? And that God still shows up today, even though we have continued to fall short and just mess this whole thing up. You know, Generous Coffee came. Thanks for asking about it.
No problem.
When I was young, my parents took me to one of the coolest things they ever did for my faith walk was they took me to Honduras to get into Honduras. Like, it wasn't just a, I mean, I talk about in the book. At first, it was like a look at me, I'm going on a mission trip type of thing. But it led into us actually investing in Honduras, building friendships and partnerships in Honduras. We got to see people who go without clean water and clean or food and no shelter. And this isn't just like isolated places. This is like the country, and see kids who are starving and all the stuff that you would imagine when you go to a third world country. And my buddy started an organization called humanityandhopeunited.org. And Humanity Hope United, in short, goes in these communities and asks them what they need, what they want, and what they dream of. And then we partner with those communities to help them get that. So it doesn't change necessarily their culture. It doesn't change their, their uniqueness. What it does is it shows God's love, but it also allows them the dignity to know that they're doing this as well as we are, that we're partners in this. Well, that it's working incredibly well. And it's been a really cool thing to see my buddy pursue and that I get to sit on the board of. But one of the things that happens is fundraising is always difficult. And if you're going to build a nonprofit built on sustainability, you want to have a sustainable fundraising plan, because you can't plan 2 years in advance when you don't know what, you know, you're going to have in the bank in 2 years. So we started Generous Coffee with the idea that we could sell the highest grade coffee. So it's specialty coffee, t-shirts made out of plastic water bottles, jewelry made in the Dominican Republic. All this stuff with stories behind it that are sustainable to the world. And then donate 100% of our profits to nonprofits and social causes fighting human-facing injustice around the world. So I don't take a salary off of it. Our CEO, I just recently stepped down as our CEO, and I'm in the president role now. I'm still a founder, obviously, but he's really a lot better at strategy and data analysis than I am. And we don't take salaries. This is a passion project for us. We're fortunate enough to not have to take a salary, but it is our full-time jobs. And it's selling coffee, selling these things on generouscoffee.com, and then we just donate back. So we want to kind of be the fundraising engine to all these organizations in the world that are doing it on the ground. And it's been an incredible project. You can have it delivered to your house. That's what most of our customers do. And my slogan in my sales pitch is, you're going to drink coffee anyways. Why not make it life-changing coffee?
I love that.
Yeah. So it's been an awesome deal over the last 3 years to be a part of.
That's amazing. Well, I am a coffee fiend and I will be heading over there to grab some after this interview. And listen, I so appreciate you and what you're doing. I mean, you're talking about Generous Coffee. You've got this book, Alone in Plain Sight, coming out February 2nd. You're really using your platform for amazing things. Thanks so much for coming on the show today, Ben.
Hey, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me. Thanks for talking about the book. It's a big deal. And, you know, as I said at the beginning, if one person can read it and feel less alone, it's all been worth it. And thanks to podcasts like this, I hope that at least one person purchases it. So thank you.
Thank you. And that wraps Edify with Billy Hollowell. I had a great time today, and I appreciate you guys sticking with me in the beginning there. I'm passionate about what's going on in this country, and I know that there are so many feelings and emotions and opinions, and I know how angry and frustrated some people are. But if we don't stop and listen to each other, I'm not saying you have to agree with each other, but listen, we are not going to be able to move through this. And no matter what happens, we've got hope, and we can find hope in Christ. And you know, I have to remind myself of that. It's been a very frustrating week for me. I know it's been a lot of frustration for a lot of people. I just hope that we can come together in our disagreement to find ways in which we can move forward and progress this amazing experiment, this amazing country that we all love. And everybody wants the best for the country and sometimes for themselves, right? So there's a similarity there. If we can lean into that and figure out ways in which we can at least tolerate and work together, man, the future could be so amazing and bright. And I also want to thank Ben Higgins for coming on the show. It was really interesting to hear his perspective. And I think a lot of us right now are looking for meaning and we are looking for hope. And so I really appreciated his words. So grab his book, read a little bit more about him and see what he's all about. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the show. We will be back next week with much, much more.
Thanks for listening to the Edify podcast. For more transformational and faith-inspiring podcasts, head over to edify.app, where you can stream thousands of Christian shows right now. And for convenience on the go, download the Edify podcast app today from the Apple and Google Play stores and at edify.app.